From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I thought this week we might focus our podcast on a couple of important trials that were published just this past week in the area of intervention for stable ischemic heart disease. You may recall that the Orbita trial received a lot of national attention, and that's one of the trials we want to go over, as well as another randomized trial that I think is important called SENIOR. So let's start with Orbita. This came out this week in Lancet, but it was originally published online in November. It's an objective randomized blinded investigation with optimal medical therapy of angioplasty in stable angina. The goal of the trial was to assess the efficacy of percutaneous coronary intervention compared with a sham placebo procedure for angina relief among patients with stable angina. The study design included patients with stable angina who had evidence of severe single-vessel stenosis, and they were randomized 1-to-1 to either receive a PCI or a placebo sham procedure. After enrollment, it's notable that the patients received an additional 6 weeks of medical optimization. Coronary angiography was done, typically radial or femoral, and the patients had auditory isolation. They had headphones so that they were unaware of the discussion during the procedure as to whether or not an intervention was actually done. In all the patients, a research invasive physiologic assessment of fractional flow reserve and instantaneous wave-free ratio was done. The operator was actually blinded to the physiology values and therefore did not use them to guide treatment. And we'll talk about this in a minute. Randomization occurred after this physiologic assessment. For patients who got the PCI, the clinical operator used drug-eluting stents to treat all lesions that were felt to be angiographically significant by visual analysis. And the mandate was to try to achieve angiographic complete revascularization. After the PCI, IFR and FFR were measured again. And in the placebo patients, the patients were kept sedated for another 15 minutes on the cath lab table, and the coronary catheters were withdrawn and no intervention was done. Now, this is a small trial. There were 200 patients enrolled and it was short duration of follow-up, only 6 weeks. The mean age, 66 years, percent female, 27%. The patients had a stable angina or angina equivalent. Exclusions included an acute coronary syndrome, left main disease, obviously contraindications to drug-eluting stenting. Patients with chronic total occlusions were not involved. Severe valve disease, severe LV dysfunction, pulmonary hypertension, brief life expectancy, etc. Other salient features to note: about 13% of the patients had had a previous PCI. The EF was normal in the vast majority, 92%. Most of the patients were Canadian Cardiovascular Society angina class 2, 59%, and 39% were class 3. And the average duration of angina was 9 months. Most of the time, the lesion was in the LAD, 70%, and the median area stenosis by QCA was 85%. And in the retrospect, the median baseline FFR was 0.72, and the median post-PCI FFR was 0.9. The primary outcome was change in exercise time from baseline for either PCI or sham. The change in baseline was 28 seconds if they had PCI versus 12 seconds on exercise if they had sham. Secondary outcomes: the Seattle Angina Questionnaire showed a change from 7.4 to 5.0, not significant, and also the angina frequency did fall in the PCI group from 14 to 9.6, but that was not statistically significant, and the change in Duke treadmill score was different as well, PCI 1.22 versus 0.1, but again, the number was not significant. So that's basically the results. The interpretation, of course, takes us all over the place. This is an extremely carefully done trial, but the number of patients was really small. And so the changes in angina frequency or Duke treadmill score, although they showed a directionality favoring PCI, They weren't statistically significant. I also found the fact that the patients got additional medical therapy for a month and a half. If you actually read the study, an additional number of patients became symptom-free before they actually got their PCI or the sham. Obviously, one of the things that made this trial highly visible was this whole idea of doing interventional sham control. And we found this with the Simplicity Hypertension 3 trial earlier, which looked at the possibility of treating renal artery stenosis. Another problem with the trial was the fact that the physiologic measure of stenosis was not actually used in treatment. They did FFR or IFR, but the therapy was based on the visual assessment. And so if the FFR had been used, it seems possible that a higher percentage of more significant physiologic lesions would have been dilated, and maybe we'd have seen more benefit. Obviously, this trial does not change practice, at least in my experience. I do think it represents an important type of clinical trial and moves us into a whole new era in terms of how we might think about doing clinical trials, measuring the effectiveness of intervention in patients who have apparently stable disease. Now, let's shift gears to a different group of patients, and that is the group discussed in the senior trial. This is also published in The Lancet, drug-eluting stents in elderly patients with coronary artery disease, a randomized single-blind trial. The hypothesis was looking at whether to use bare metal stents instead of drug-eluting stents with the notion of shortening the duration of dual antiplatelet therapy in patients who are elderly and have a higher risk of bleeding. So the investigators recruited patients from 44 centers in 9 countries. Eligibility required them to be 75 years or older. They had to have stable angina, silent ischemia, or an acute syndrome. They had to have at least one coronary lesion greater than 70% and deemed to be eligible for PCI. Obviously, patients who couldn't take DAPT were excluded. Patients who had other comorbidities that would limit life expectancy to a year or less, previous hemorrhagic stroke, and several others. So after the intended duration of DAPT was recorded, 1 month for patients with stable presentation and 6 months for patients with unstable presentation, then the patients were randomly allocated, in this case, to either DES or a bare metal stent. The primary outcome was to compare major adverse events and cerebrovascular events. So they randomized 1,200 patients. 596 got a drug-eluting stent, and 604 got a bare metal stent. The primary endpoint occurred in 68, or 12% of the DES group, and in 16% of the bare metal group. Bleeding complications were similar, and stent thrombosis was very rare, just 3 versus 8 in both treatment groups. So I think what this trial suggests is that drug-eluting stent therapy and a short duration of DAPT, 6 months, are better than bare metal stent and a similar duration of DAPT with respect to the occurrence of all-cause mortality, myocardial infarction, and stroke. Clearly, the newer drug-eluting stents have a lower profile. They appear to have a lower risk of stent thrombosis. And when you look at the risk of stent thrombosis over time, it certainly appears to flatten out by 6 months. So the senior trial would suggest that drug-eluting stenting with a duration of dual antiplatelet therapy of 6 months for those who present with unstable disease and 1 month for people who present with just stable disease may well have merit. This has not yet made it into the guidelines, but I think the senior trial does inform practice and is likely a forerunner of what we'll be doing in the future. We'll be looking at a given patient. If their presentation is stable disease, then we can potentially use a drug-eluting stent and a short duration of antiplatelet therapy with 2 agents. If their presentation is an acute coronary syndrome, again, we'll be using a low-profile drug-eluting stent and reducing the duration of therapy with dual antiplatelets to, say, 6 months. Certainly a major advance as we think about this common area of cardiovascular care. I also want to call your attention to, if you go to the website acc.org, there's a really nice summary of decision-making for invasive coronary angiography in patients with stable ischemic heart disease, an interventionalist perspective by Drs. Sani and Tobas. And it's a nice third piece of information that you might want to take a look at on acc.org. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org. All of this information can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Find us online or whenever you get your podcasts. And it's my pleasure to be involved in your education using this vehicle. Thank you.